This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
From North, South, East, and West, North America, Japan, and back again, this is your home for modern-day wrestling. With the occasional trip back in time, it's Place to Be Nation's main event. Now let's head into Studio B with your host, Scott Criscolo, and the godfather, Nate Milton.
Place to Be Nation! Another episode of your home for everything modern-day wrestling, from Daytona Beach to Baltimore to Philadelphia to Newport News, Virginia, to Appleton, Wisconsin, and even this dumpster known as Norwalk, Connecticut. Welcome to your home for everything modern-day wrestling, Place to Be Nation's main event. I'm your co-host, Scott Criscolo, episode 129. And I can already tell you right now, I have no 29s off the top of my head. I'm just going to bring the other two guys in because they probably do. First off, he is the co-host of the Kings of Sport and many other tremendous shows that you can get if you join Patreon, and he'll talk more about that later on in the show, but the Kings of Sport is awesome, and so is he, the godfather, Nate Milton.
What is going on, brother? And in the words of, I'm sure the theme of somebody we'll talk about this week, we're back and better than ever. Episode 129, so I want to give a shout-out to a pair of great 90s NBA big men. Shout-out to Marcus Camby and never nervous Purvis Ellison.
Purvis Ellison, ooh. Yes. He wore 29 in the NBA. He wore 43. This I remember very well. I was in grade school, but he wore 43 when he was with Louisville when they won the national championship in 1986 when he was a freshman. That's where he got the name Never Nervous Purvis.
Still one of the greatest skybox NBA trading cards I ever had was Purvis Ellison on draft day.
Yes.
Purvis Ellison and then Gary Payton with the Supersonics with the red ball cap and the black suit with the green pinstripes, I believe it was.
That's right.
Yes.
He was delicious.
Was that the gold and black year?
Skybox?
I'm not even waiting to get called in. I mean, you talk Skybox basketball. Skybox,
you know what?
I'm diving in.
Dark Steve,
Skybox,
ladies and gentlemen.
Lineup.
Skybox Steve. Of course, everyone knows the voice of the conscience of Place to Be Nation, Mr. Steve Willie. Look at you fucking busting in good old Will style. Will from Texas style here.
I started talking and I'm like, oh, man. That is
we found Steve Willie's trigger.
That is not radio discipline right there.
but of course, it's always good to have both you on, gentlemen. There's other 29 I'm missing. I mean, they're sure there's 29s from that have played for the Mets and wait a minute. What about for Yankee fans? I think Catfish Hunter wore 29. I don't know why that's in my head, but anyway, probably because I was watching Old Timers Day from earlier in the week a little while ago. He of course wasn't there. He died in 1999. Yeah, there's got to be other 29s. And go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/main event, PTBN's main event, and give us some other 29s. Underneath this episode on your comments.
There's a glaring football one that we're missing. Mm-hmm. That's my, I'm going to
29. What team?
I'm not even going to say that. I would say top five running backs of all time.
And maybe the top in terms of style. When you think of 80s style.
80s style, 29. Why am I brain farting?
The hair, the goggles.
The goggles.
Oh, and I have his jersey in my fucking closet. Of course, talking about tremendous Los Angeles Ram / Indianapolis Colt / I think he was a Raider after that. And SMU alum, Mr. Eric Dickerson. Yes, of course. How stupid am I? I got his fucking jersey in my closet. loved Eric Dickerson. The Pony Express, baby. Or as they said on ESPN, Pony Excess. But that's an entirely different podcast for another day. Let me go around the horn real quick. Do you think we'll ever see another death penalty, Nate Milton?
No, I don't think so, just because I think even if you go back and watch that documentary.
Yes, which is tremendous, by the way.
I think that in hindsight, the folks that were in charge of that realized it was a bit too stringent. So I don't think we'll ever see the NCAA take actions that strict again.
Even with all these hoop programs that, like, fucked around, like probably Arizona and Michigan State and some of the others?
I think the move now, and Steve can give his two cents, but I think the move now is you want to be proactive, and you know kids are going to want to make money. And so how can we head these agents and head these boosters off at the pass? How can we set a system up? And they're talking about it now. How can we set this system up where we can set some money aside for the kids so they don't have to resort to things like they did back in the day with SMU?
Exactly. That's true. What do you think, Steve?
Man, I can do an hour podcast by myself arguing with myself all the sides to this argument.
Light Steve and Dark Steve?
Yeah, no, and I hate to get, like, this isn't even Dark Steve, but just take a dark turn on the podcast for a second. But if, forget about the basketball stuff, if Michigan State and Penn State couldn't get shut down for, you know, all that stuff, you know, even for a year, you know, there's never going to be a death penalty. Like, the sheer numbers of abuse that happened at those two schools is
Only problem, I think the only problem there, Steve, and I don't want to go down this, I don't want to go down this rabbit hole, but I think the only issues there are that the crimes more affected the school than the program. The university should have got punished for what that doctor at Michigan State did, and of course what Sandusky did. No, the program specifically, I don't know if one has anything to do with the other. The university should have got punished, and they did. The fucking president got fired, and Paterno died in disgrace, sadly. Which, well, I shouldn't say sadly, but it's amazing how the guy went from a hero to a villain so quickly. And there are some nitwits at State College who think he got railroaded. What? Whatever. Yeah, that's totally the other path. By the way, the Franco Harris, please. This happens when you play for the Steelers. By the way, if you have to watch the Paterno movie on HBO, if you have the HBO Go app or HBO Now, Al Pacino was an amazing Joe Paterno. He really was. So I would definitely check it out. Anyway, we don't want to go down that rabbit hole. I just wanted to ask because we were talking about death penalties and Eric Dickerson, who pretty much was paid. Him, Craig James, and like five other guys pretty much were playing as if SMU was an NFL team, in essence. There's still a controversy over the gold Corvette. It was either a Corvette or a Trans Am that Dickerson got supposedly from Texas A&M. I don't know if that's true or not, but anyway. So anyway, sorry, I can't believe I forgot Eric Dickerson. Duh, I got the blue Rams because I love the Rams jerseys. And I wore it the day of the Super Bowl. Of course, it didn't do me any good. I mushed them probably. But anyway, guys, what a fucking great show we've already got started with. And we haven't even talked wrestling yet. That's what I love about Main Event. Damn it, we haven't even talked wrestling and this show's already been great after 7.5 minutes. Steve, let's talk about the psychology of what makes a sex addict. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, man.
Let's go to a place to be live chats. There's probably plenty of them. Anyway. all right. Busy weekend in wrestling, boys. Busy weekend in wrestling, and none of it WWE related until this morning. Mm. We were going to talk a little Stomping Grounds, but do we really give a shit at this point? It's Thursday. Just quick. Did you watch any of it, Steve? I know you said you probably weren't going to. Did you watch any of it?
No, I didn't. Okay. I was too much in love with what we're going to do in the B block. I mean, I couldn't possibly come down that high.
Well, you didn't. I'm not going to say you didn't miss anything, but it was good. I don't know, Nate. What'd you think?
Yeah, I caught it after the fact, and it wasn't bad. It just wasn't, you know, appointment television. It wasn't something that you need to go out of your way to see. You know, I don't even want to go the easy route of making fun of Baron Corbin in the main event spot, but it felt like a very good edition of Raw rather than a must-see pay-per-view.
Yeah. I mean, I got to be honest. I thought the show was great up until the main event. Mm. I just can't stand Baron Corbin. He's fucking terrible. I love Seth.
And that to me is why it felt like Raw, because if this is a pay-per-view that I should be taking seriously, granted, it's not the same as it was 10, 15 years ago where I would have been shelling out $50 for this show.
Right.
So you have to take that into consideration. But if this is a big show from the company standpoint, ain't no damn way Baron Corbin should be in a main event spot.
Right. No, not at all. I thought Ricochet winning was great.
Yeah.
I thought the tag was good. I loved Lacey, and Lacey's getting better. She's getting there. I got to give her props. It wasn't as terrible as Money in the Bank was. That match sucked. This was not as bad. Ricochet and Joe was great. I liked the psychology of Kofi and Dolph. I thought it was solid. I'm looking forward to Extreme Rules. I think that's going to be a good card, but, we're not going to get into too much more. Both shows this week were solid, but we're going to talk more about the news in WWE, but we will talk about Fyter Fest, and we'll give our picks for the big show, AEW's second big pay-per-view, although this is their like secondary show, I guess. And it's on Saturday night from the Ocean Center in Daytona Beach. It's during the video game convention. So this is like Nerdville and, you know, fucking Kenny Omega's porn heaven. Last time
they had a Street Fighter 3-on-3 between New Day and Omega and the Bucks.
Yes. wonder if that'll happen this time. anyway, we'll talk about that. And, of course, guys, a two-day event coming up in Ring of Honor. Of course, it is Best in the World. Friday night. So if you're listening to this as it posted, then tonight in Baltimore and then Saturday night in Philadelphia. So a two-night affair for Ring of Honor. Big show Saturday night for AEW. But WWE headline leads off our A block, gentlemen. And, of course, in the B block, guys, it is time, as Steve mentioned, for our next installment of the classic TNA pay-per-view recap. And we will go back to October 16th, 2002 for episode 17 of the weekly shows. And for the first time, I think, guys, I'm probably wrong, but for the first time, I think all three belts are up. I don't think we've had that yet. Maybe we've had it once. But the tags are on the line, the X Division title's on the line, and the NWA World title are all on the line on this show. And we'll get to that in the B block. All right. Let's dive into the flamethrower. And, of course, the big news came out this morning that Raw and SmackDown now have executive directors. And here are the picks, and they may surprise you. Paul Heyman is now the executive director of Raw. And Big Bish, Nate Milton's guy, Big Bish is now, Eric Bischoff is now the executive director of SmackDown. Now, they both got these jobs for two very different reasons. But we'll get into that as we discuss throughout the segment. Steve, what are your thoughts on these two hires?
I was surprised, very excited at first, because any change is at least an admission that things aren't going the best. So, you know, Raw and SmackDown, we've talked about this in the past, they look the same, you know, just the looks on the screen. This is an admission that, hey, you know, things aren't going the best right now, and we do have competition, so let's mix things up. That being said, as I thought about it later in the day, Vince McMahon doesn't trust many people, does he?
No.
Has he moved on?
Nobody in his outside the family in any way.
Yeah, has he moved on past like 2002? Because bringing back Heyman and Bischoff is definitely something.
It's like these are young guys for Vince. We need some young, fresh blood.
That is true.
Oh. This is an interesting one, because I think I conditionally like this move, Scotty. Mm-hmm. And the condition is the same that the condition always is when you talk about WWE creative, and that is, will Vince listen to these guys? Because ultimately, the buck stops with one man. And so it's great to, you know, put Heyman and put Bischoff in these positions, but if at the end of the day Vince is going to do what Vince is going to do anyway, have we accomplished anything? Personally, I would have liked to have seen some younger folks in these spots, maybe Gabe Sapolsky and your favorite, Scotty, you know, your man Triple H, mm-hmm. assume these roles. But if you're going to put somebody in there, you could do a lot worse than Heyman, who is, as much praise as he gets for the creative work that he did in ECW, I don't think he gets enough credit for making the WWE version of ECW even halfway decent. Because everything that was good about that train wreck of a program, you can trace back to Paul Lee. And he's also somebody, you know, when we saw Kurt Angle start to get a little bit more serious, that was a Paul Lee thing. Rey Mysterio and Mark Henry start to get a little bit more shine, that was a Paul Lee thing, along with some other writers like Alex Greenfield in the SmackDown room. So I think Paul Lee is a great hire. And then with Bischoff, I think what Bischoff brings to the table, besides, you know, being somebody with a creative vision, is he's somebody that you can put in the room with a Fox executive and he can speak their language.
Right.
Which I don't know if a lot of people within the walls of Titan Towers can speak that corporate television language. And that's something, you know, that Bischoff, who is a guy that came up as a marketer, came up as a salesman, came up as a TV guy, I think that might end up being his biggest strength, is that he can be the guy to kind of negotiate and navigate in between Fox and the WWE.
Yeah, this is, again, as I said at the beginning, one is a creative decision. One is a I don't say corporate. That's not a good word here. One is a business television decision.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
SmackDown does not have a creative problem. Because no one ever really – one thing SmackDown will always get the benefit of the doubt about is the content per se. Like, no one ever, like, craps their pants about a shitty SmackDown. They'll just be like, SmackDown's all right tonight. Raw will always get, because it is the flagship. It has always been bred as the flagship. So a shitty SmackDown is not as big a deal as a shitty Raw, as we've seen over the last, you know, several months, that WWE haters, and there are more than enough of them, will lambaste a crappy Raw, but bail out a crappy SmackDown. So creatively, Paul Heyman was more needed on Raw, because as we've seen through the history of ECW, business was not Paul's strongest suit. The last person you want to give a checkbook to, next to Vern Gagne, who would make out checks to himself, was Paul Heyman. I think the problem, and we've talked about this before, guys, and I've talked about this on other shows and, you know, through social media. The problem with Raw is there's too many Indians to go to only one chief. Raw has like 987 writers. They all go to Vince, and then they take all 987 ideas and mush it together into one show, and that's why it looks like a big hot pile of goulash.
And then Vince changes it at the last minute, an hour before the show.
Exactly. And then it turns into fucking a 2000 Nitro. not a good idea. I think it's great that Paul will be the point man for that show. We all know Paul Heyman is a brilliant guy who knows storylines and can really, you know, really chew on something and really, you know, maturate it, if that's a word, and let it grow and marinate into something really good. And that's WWE's problem right now.
And he's good at characters, Scotty. He's good at, you know, finding a guy like, and I'll just use this as an example because he's a performer Paul has said good things about, but somebody like an Apollo Crews, who this company has not had any damn clue what to do with. He's somebody that can look at Apollo, size up the strengths, size up the weaknesses, and play to those strengths instead of what the company does now, which is we'll throw all these mid-carders out there and they're going to sink or swim, most of the time sink, because we don't have any idea how to play to their strengths.
The problem, the number one problem Apollo Crews had, and I've said this 1,000 times, is he came up too fast. He should have stayed in NXT for much longer.
Yeah.
Sadly, the only bad part for him was that at the time, NXT didn't have the North American title yet, so there wasn't a secondary belt for him to kind of grow on. And I don't know if he was at the level yet to be an NXT champion. That was Apollo Crews' problem. And I like Apollo Crews. I think he's a good worker. Always thought so. So where Paul is right now is exactly where he needs to be. He needs to kind of fix Raw, fix the character development, and get that show rolling in the right direction. SmackDown does not have a creative problem, but SmackDown is going to be going to the big time. And you want somebody as an executive director that's going to talk to the Fox people and not talk to them in wrestling carny speak. Like, the last person you want talking to the Fox execs is bucktooth fuckhead Kevin Dunn. You don't want that fucking dipshit anywhere near a boardroom. You couldn't hear. He probably throw a spit in everybody's face when he talks anyway. We don't put matches on the screen. It's too distracting. Go fuck yourself, Alvin, Simon, Theodore, whatever your name is. What a fucking idiot. That's the dumbest fucking thing I've ever heard in my life. We don't put matches on the screen because they're too distracting. It's the same match, dipshit. Fucking idiot. So the poor assholes that sit in the 400 seats at MetLife watching WrestleMania have to try and squint because you won't put the match on the fucking screen. How does that asshole still have a fucking... Oh, that's right. It's Vince. Triple H probably cannot wait to fire that fucking guy. Cannot wait to fire him. But that's another rant for another day. Although I just did a rant now. Whew, haven't done that in a while. Eric Bischoff is the perfect guy to talk to these Fox execs because Bischoff is a TV guy and his strengths... Those strengths were never in doubt. His ability to talk to TV people and get the ball cultivating with Fox between now and, you know, whenever in October it moves. I don't think there's a date set yet. Creatively is not his problem. Now, I'm sure, you know, he'll have creative go through him, but Bischoff will get help.
Yeah.
He'll have help there. And I think he'll be fine. But you don't want fucking Heyman talking to the Fox guys. You won't even know what the hell they're talking about. You have fucking, you know, midgets and fucking, you know, Sandman drinking next to him and, you know, Dawn Marie on her knees, whatever. Anyway, no, Bischoff's a perfect spot here because creative is not SmackDown's problem. I mean, sure, SmackDown needs some tweaks, but it's not the end of the world for SmackDown. No. They more need to be ready for the big time. Now, I know everybody said, oh, do you think somebody in our chat, and then I saw it on Twitter too. Oh, do you think Triple H is pissed that he got passed up? I don't think so at all. I'm sure he's like, I'm happy because I'm in charge of the one brand that actually everybody likes.
Mm-hmm.
So why do I want to go over to the fucking poison brands? Let those guys fix it.
Yep.
I'm happy with my Adam Cole and my Shayna Baszler and my Street Profit. I'm happy with them because everybody else is. Let Heyman and fucking Bischoff have to duck the shit that hits the fan. You know what I'm saying? So if I'm Triple H, I'm like, all right, good luck, guys. I'm happy down here at Full Sail with my boys and my girls. I'm good.
And Vince is almost, if not completely hands-free off of that. Like, he has no hands on NXT whatsoever.
No.
Where you throw Paul and Eric in there, they still... You know, it's been very clear that they have to answer directly to Vince. Hey, a question, though, about this. Do you think this, and this is strictly just coming up with ideas and gossip and whatnot, but do you think this means he's going to step back a little bit, Vince, you know?
Well, by the time we get to, I'm curious your thoughts, too, Nate. By October, he's going to have to start thinking about XFL. He's going to have to. Because, you know, when SmackDown hits Fox, we're going to be like 5 months from week one of the XFL season.
Yeah.
And I gotta tell you guys, obviously the XFL is in a better position than the AAF was. Because if ESPN and Fox are jumping all over the XFL, clearly the XFL is somehow in a better position than the AAF was when they started on CBS. So I don't know if there's a better structure with the XFL, if Oliver Luck, who's the commissioner, yes, his dad, if there's a structure in place, if things are looking better, if, you know, we're not hearing anything about, you know, how to get players recruited or drafted and getting camps ready and all this stuff, if that's good, then maybe XFL is in better shape than we think, than the AAF was when they started. I just, because when I found out that Fox and, because I knew that Fox had something to do with the XFL, because giving $1 billion to SmackDown just didn't seem kosher. And everyone's like, oh, my friend's like, oh, but it's Alpha Entertainment. It's a totally new figure. Oh, please. Like, they couldn't find the pulse to that. Really? Get your head out of the sand. You know what I mean? But, and that's fine. I'm not mad at him. I'm not saying it's unethical. I'm just saying that's the reason. I'm not saying it's unethical. I think it's perfectly fine. What do you think, Nate?
To the first point about Vince maybe taking a step back, I think he'll take a step back, but not, you know, he won't be completely hands off. Like, he'll still be in the room. It'll still run through him, but he'll have his attention divided a bit. once the XFL launches? And to the second part that you're talking about, Scotty, in terms of was this a more attractive deal than the AF, if you will? I think it was for a couple of reasons. Number one, you waited a year. And with something like this, I know a lot of times leagues like to think, you know, you want to strike while the iron's hot. But for something like this, you need a plan. And you need to get people in place. And you need to get systems in place so that you can have, you know, sustainability perhaps. And so I think them taking a year, extra year made them more attractive. I think the kind of built-in, even though we're two separate companies, you can't see my air quotes, people listening on whatever device they listen to, because these are two separate companies. But even that being said, you have the framework of somebody like a Vince McMahon who has been shown to be successful with the WWE. You know, regardless of what people say about the quality of Raw, you cannot argue with the quality of their stocks right now. And you cannot argue with the quality of the checkbook when it comes to the WWE. And so, yeah, that Fox deal, I knew from the start. Like, at least I didn't know because nobody knew. But I assumed from the start that part of SmackDown going to Fox was some type of deal with the XFL. And so when you get Fox there, it's always a thing with these stations, Scotty, and you know, if they're just waiting for somebody to be the first one out there to make the move. And so Fox making a move makes it easier for ESPN to make a move because now they don't have to be the only one sticking their neck out on the limb. And now you've got two broadcasting partners that carry a lot of weight. And so, yeah, I still have my doubts about the actual on-field product of the XFL, but just from a business and television standpoint, I think they're in a position to set up for success.
Yeah, and I think that's why I think this is definitely an XFL move, Steve. I definitely think that Vince needs, and that's why he brought Pritchard back. He's part of that this whole, you know, enclave as well.
Or maybe Vince just really hates Conrad.
Most people, I'm sure a few people do.
Vince is just like, all right, Arn Anderson, you're next.
Do you think he even knows who Conrad is?
No. Triple H knows who Conrad is, though. That I definitely think.
Unless Vince hangs out with Flair a lot, then maybe.
Yeah, I know, right?
Would you ever have believed that in 2019 we would be talking about Vince McMahon, Paul Heyman, and Eric Bischoff running the WWE?
Nope.
Like, you know, like in the 80s sitting around the pool with Pat Patterson and
I mean it's crazy, but it also makes sense in a weird way because regardless of what you think about Vince McMahon, at his core, he, even though he's gone a different way and a different path than his father, he is his father's son. And he is born into the business. And when, you know, the other, like back in the territory days, when somebody got bought out or somebody folded, you would often see, you know, the people that ran those territories come to work for, you know, Vince Sr. or go to work for Crockett. And so it would make sense if you're thinking from Vince McMahon's perspective, I need help with this. Maybe he didn't even go to the step of admitting he needs help. Maybe he's just like, I need somebody to boost up this wonderful show that I'm producing. Who would he think of outside of his family? The two guys that gave him the biggest run for his money, which would have been Paulie and Bischoff.
Yep. True. And they're both doing their strengths.
Yeah.
Paul is dealing creatively and Bischoff's thinking business and television wise. So they're both in their perfect spots. So that's that. There's no debate about that. I think this is a tremendous move. Is the threat
how soon,
of AEW?
I was going to say, Scotty, how soon though before we see either guy on TV?
Well, I think Paul is staying on as Brock's advocate. I don't think we'll see Bischoff. I don't think he wants to be on TV. That's my opinion. What do you think, Steve?
I would hope Paul's going to be on TV just for Brock.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't think that's he's fine.
But yeah, I hope not. I mean, how many authority figures do we need at this point? This isn't 2002 NWA TNA.
Oh, you mean there's no Madison Plumtree or Mason with a plum? Wait, no, Mason Plumtree played for Duke. Oh, wait, that's Plumlee. Never mind. We'll get to more of him later.
I mean, there is another, like, Jeff Jarrett's always out there if you need another executive assistant, Vince.
Jimmer Fredette.
Oh, my God. And Jerry Jarrett was running things while Vince was in the courthouse.
Yep.
Just don't bring Brock Bryan Law. Oh, you can anyway. Never mind.
I was going to say Vince Russo, but.
Well, that's even sports entertainment extreme. We haven't gotten there yet.
Okay, so my straw man, I think I mentioned this to you, Scott.
Yes.
Next week on Tuesday and Wednesday, how many people do you think are going to be either complaining or lauding the fact, you know, that this has affected the ratings in a positive or negative way?
I don't know. What do you think, Nate? You go first.
I think that they'll get an initial benefit of the doubt because it's change, and change, regardless of the outcome, at first it's appealing, and it you know, there's you have the benefits of the unknown. And I think, you know, you were speaking about AEW, Scotty. You know, I think in addition to a lot of the good things AEW's done, part of the benefit of the doubt that they're getting from the fan base is the unknown.
Mm-hmm.
And the unknown, whether you're talking about entertainment, sports, your job, your 9-to-5, the unknown is always out there, and it's always positive, you know, for the most part, until it becomes a reality, and then you can discern whether it was positive or negative. So I think they'll get the benefit of the doubt for a couple weeks, but if, you know, a month from now we're still getting Baron Corbin main events under the quote-unquote Dangerously administration, you know, you'll hear those complaints again.
Yes, I agree.
I'm hoping we get a good 2 or 3 months before there's either criticism or just mass celebration. You need things to breathe. And I think that's just the remnants of the Attitude Era where you would compare ratings every single week against each other. And it's like, oh, that segment worked because of this. And it's like, no. You need to create – they didn't have empty stopping grounds audience overnight. That happened because of overtime. You know, we're going to need to have this kind of new administration play out for a couple months. Kind of, you know, what you're saying, Nate, to see what happens. We're not going to see an entire different show on Monday.
Mm-hmm. No, we're not. Not overnight. And before we go any further, we're going to talk about AEW in a minute. Before anybody craps their pants about the first episode, let's take into account that the ratings for their first episode are going to be no indicator whatsoever of whether the show is any good or not. Everyone's going to tune into that first Wednesday night show or whatever night it is, Wednesday night, and the ratings are going to be through the roof. Will it beat Raw? It probably will. Most likely it will. Doesn't mean the show will be any good, but everyone's just going to – the AEW lovers are just going to turn on just to make sure that the rating goes up. Whether the show is crap or not is irrelevant. But let's see how the ratings are for episode 8. Or 9, then we'll see if AEW's TV has any kind of legs to it. I don't want anyone to be like, oh, see, episode 1 did a 39. Oh, my God, it's better than Raw. WWE should shut down and give all the money to the Bucks. No, you're an idiot. Shut up. Let's get into November, December. Because don't forget, guys, they've got a huge, unless they come up with another show, they've got a huge gap between All Out and next May's Double or Nothing. Double or Nothing 2, or whatever they're going to call it. So they're obviously going to have another show somewhere between Labor Day and Memorial Day, obviously. Some kind of winter show, maybe two, you know? So I just want to say that because I'm getting so fucking tired of some of these mouth breathers who seem to think that, you know, this administration is the greatest thing since sliced bread, and WWE should just shut the doors and hand all their money to the cons, and we only have one company running everything. It's just getting ludicrous now. I am not, and I've gotten trashed on YouTube channels for being anti AEW. I'm not. I'm a fucking realist. We sit here and we talk about, you know, this company that had one show, one All In does not count. No one get you cannot use All In. That's the rule because that wasn't an AEW show. That was just some show with a bunch of guys on it. And so they can get away with making mistakes. Like, a podcast I watch, and I've mentioned these guys many times on the show in the past, my good friends on YouTube, the Squared Circle Psychobabble, they had a great segment on YouTube this week, actually today, about who's going to be the inaugural tag team champions. We'll talk more about that when we do the Fyter Fest picks. But people are like, oh, if they pick the Bucks, if the Bucks win the inaugural tag belt, oh, see, they're self-serving. That's not going to happen. They're not going to get that kind of criticism. They're going to get the benefit of the doubt. They could do no wrong, even if they do wrong right now. So it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. I think they're going to win the belts first, and I think it's fine. But that's another story for another day. In any event, I like this move. I like the Bischoff on SmackDown because it helps the TV negotiations, and I think Heyman is fine for Raw. We'll see what happens, though. Nate's right. We're all right here. It just needs to have some time. But I am looking forward to Extreme Rules in July. I think it's going to be a good show, even though no match has really been picked yet. But they'll be different than Stomping Grounds, which will make it different than the War of Wakanda that took place earlier in the month.
I think Kofi and Joe is going to be great for both guys. Like, no disrespect to Dolph Ziggler, but part of Kofi's reign so far has felt underwhelming because his opponents haven't felt credible, but Joe is a credible threat. And I think they're going to come up with some great stuff.
Yeah, I agree. You agree, Steve?
Yeah, I do. And my hope is that they're just slowly building, that they're going to run with this Kofi thing for a while and starting with lower class opponents like a Ziggler. And I couldn't think of the best word.
Talking about the lower class in the B block.
Yeah, like that just seemed like the right word. And hopefully building him up so you can have, you know, a little bit of the Kofi title reign and him moving to the championship was that. The story was that he was kind of a fluke and, you know, the whole B-plus player stuff that they did with Brian. So, okay, now let's solidify and the title reign and make it look, you know, more legitimate. I can get it. I can get behind it if they do it. But, yeah, like you said, Nate, Joe is definitely a step up.
No, I agree. I think it's going to be a lot of fun when we get to July 14th or 13th. I'm sorry. Wait, is it July 14th in Philly. Of course, the night before is Fight for the Fallen. That'll be a fun weekend of wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
Also on that day is the Evolve show on the network. Oh, I'm not going to get into it. I don't want to get into it. Who cares? I don't want to get into a pissing match about, because I don't want to seem cold and I'm not, guy. You guys know me a long time. But I thought Kenny Omega's tweet was pretty stupid, to be honest with you. First off, for those that don't know what I mean, Kenny was trashing WWE for, you know, putting a show up against a charity show and how cruel can you be and blood money and all this other fucking bullshit. Kenny, go back to playing Mortal Kombat 21 or whatever it is, 11. First off, the people in Jacksonville haven't even sold the show out yet. The show's still not sold out in Jacksonville, which just kind of sucks. Since a portion of it's going to, you know, a charity to stop gun violence, which I think it's great. Great idea by AEW, by the way. Tremendous idea. But number two, as far as I know, now this I might be wrong on, but as far as I looked on the Bleacher Report Live app, and I think Fight for the Fallen is free, just like Fyter Fest is.
Yeah,
correct.
So, Kenny, you're not... The TV people are not taking money out of anybody's hands.
Yeah.
And number three, I think more people are going to watch Fight for the Fallen anyway because they'll just watch the Evolve show on demand. To be honest with you.
There'll probably be more people on my cul-de-sac than there will be at the Evolve show. So.
I'll be honest. What am I going to pick? Am I going to pick the Evolve show or am I going to pick Fight for the Fallen? I'm going to pick Fight for the Fallen. Because I don't know a lot of guys on the Evolve show.
I will pick Fight for the Fallen, and then I will go back and watch Matt Riddle versus Drew Gulak because I love them both. I think there's an Adam Cole. Is Adam Cole against Tozawa? Did they say that?
The NXT title. I think that's going to be a fucking great match.
I will watch that, and then I'm going to get a huge kick out of seeing Eddie Kingston on the WWE Network.
I agree. Yeah, I agree. So, Kenny, chill the fuck out. Seriously.
He did apologize. I was just reading that.
Stupid. And I like it.
But he said he was upset at the decision makers and had absolutely nothing against, you know, any of the wrestlers or the bookers or anything like that.
Nah, It's understandable on the surface, but when you think about the logistics, it's not. No one's getting any money taken out of their mouths or out of their hands or whatever. So, but yeah, no, it's fine. But it's gonna be great. But I think more people are gonna watch Fight for the Fallen anyway.
Oh yeah.
However, guys, why don't we move ahead so we can move along tonight? We're not talking about Fight for the Fallen because, which by the way, I think there's what, 3 matches booked for that right now. Yes. So, so we don't have to worry about that anyway. Hell, All Out's got 1 match. Actually, two. Two matches. All right. Fighter Fest taking place Saturday night at the Ocean Center in Daytona Beach. And of course, it's actually a gaming festival with a wrestling ring in the middle. And this is a big thing from Alex Jabaley, who's the head of what the fuck is it?
CEO,
Community Effort Orlando. It's an annual fighting game event held in Orlando, introduced in 2010. And of course, they, you know, now it's adding wrestling. So here's the mat. Match by match. We don't need to do that. This is what we'll do. I'll fire off the matches, and then we'll just get a general sense of what we think is going to happen Saturday and get our own opinion. So here's the card. On the pre-show, Michael Nakazawa will wrestle Alex Jabaley in a hardcore match. We know that's going to be a fucking mess.
That's a comedy match for the pre-show. That's all it is.
Yeah, that is all it is. Kylie Rae will take on Leva Bate. Leva. And I don't know why this is on the pre-show and not on the card, but a 3-way tag team match between Best Friends, SoCal Uncensored, and Private Party. The winners will advance to All Out in August for an opportunity.
this is convoluted.
WCW. The opportunity for a first round bye in the World Tag Team Tournament. The tournament itself will take place on TV. So now here's the match card proper. Yuka Sakazaki, Rio, and Nyla Rose in a 3-way. Christopher Daniels against Seema. In a 4-way, Adam Page, Hangman, Jimmy Havoc, Jungle Boy, and MJF. The big one, the non-sanctioned match, John Moxley and Joey Janela. I don't know why it's not sanctioned. That was like a big deal today on Twitter. It's a non-sanctioned match. Really? You've only been a company for like 6 months. You already have the non-sanctioned matches? What is the insurance card not in yet? The Elite take on the Lucha Brothers and the Laredo Kid in a 6-man tag. So it's Kenny and the Bucks against the Lucha Brothers and the Laredo Kid. And then Cody takes on Darby Allin, who, by the way, boys, is the Northeast Wrestling Champion, the promotion based out of this fucking state that I live in, this fucking about-to-be-told toilet. Their champion is Darby Allin. Otherwise, I had no fucking clue who Darby Allin was, to be honest with you. But I've watched vignettes on the American Nightmare YouTube channel, which is pretty cool. All right. Steve, general thoughts on the card, and just give me one or two things that you're looking forward to.
Okay. I'm kind of thinking this is almost like an In Your House light. I'll just go In Your House. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just to keep the buzz going. I think the match of the show is going to be Moxley and Janela. And Janela is just kind of a wild card type guy. He's a good wrestler, but he can also go kind of garbagey at times, right, kind of hardcore. And I think they're just saying it's non-sanctioned to show that this is going to be like weapons, and there's probably going to be blood in this. And they want to show that Moxley is going to go back to his pre-WWE wild man, hardcore type match, like CZW blood matches. So I think they're doing it just to create a buzz about the company. Feature Janela, raise him up by going against a big name like Moxley to the, you know, like someone like you, Scott, who's a little bit newer to some of these guys.
Admittedly,
and
I
see
am.
If it works. Yeah, and I don't mean that as
no, I understand.
As an insult at all. It's like, hey,
no, that's my point. I wanted to make a point to say that some of these guys, I have no idea who. Yeah. Until I watched Double or Nothing, I had no fucking clue who Darby Allin was.
Well, exactly. Yeah, that's totally fine. I mean, that's kind of the point. And throw him against a guy like Cody for Darby, and throw Janela against Moxley. I think it's kind of smart. And I'm looking forward to the Darby Cody match a tiny bit, just to see how this conflict of style, this clash of styles, when you've seen Cody go against kind of heavily booked, very good matches against Dustin and Nick Aldis. Whereas this one is like, okay, really? Darby's kind of this, you know, kind of indie, kind of dark, hardcore guy versus, you know, straight and narrow, Mr. 2.5 stars, Cody Rhodes. So I'm intrigued how that's going to work out. I think those are the two things that are big. And I'm hoping that the triple threat match with the women is going to be as entertaining as the Joshi 6 woman from the last card. I think those are the biggest things.
Mm. Nate, what about you? What are you looking forward to?
Steve said this is, you know, in your house. I'm going to go to a different analogy, Scotty, and you'll appreciate this as a fan of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Mm-hmm.
In a weird way, there's always been this one film franchise that kind of centers around some of the big events and comes after some of the biggest films in the series, but it's not as big. So after Avengers Age of Ultron, the very next film was Ant-Man.
Mm-hmm.
And after Avengers Infinity War, the very next film was Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yes, it was.
And so those are both good films, but they don't have nearly the weight of the other films that are around them. You know, right. they're kind of placeholders, but they're, you know, they're giving you some action, but they're just setting you up for what's to come. And I think that's what Fyter Fest is. You know, it's you know, some people you want to see, like Moxley, like Janela. You know, you're going to have your standout six-man match with the Lucha Brothers and Laredo Kid versus the Elite. I think that's going to be crazy. The three-way tag on the pre-show could end up being the best match of the night if they give it time, because the Best Friends, SoCal Uncensored, and Private Party, who is a team a lot of folks don't know about but have been doing some really good work on the indies, I think they could do some really good things together. You know, when you talk about Cody and Darby Allin, I'm not somebody who's very familiar with Darby Allin, but at this point, Scotty, you know, we've talked a lot tonight about benefit of the doubt. Cody Rhodes is somebody who has absolutely earned benefit of the doubt from me with his match against Dustin and with the match from All In against Nick Aldis. This isn't at that level, but even for a match of this scope, I have faith that Cody won't give us some garbage. Like, it'll at least be entertaining. So I think it'll be a good show. It won't be like this memorable show that we'll be talking about 10 years from now. But it's just kind of a placeholder to get the fans that are rabid about All In, AEW. It's something to get them motivated for All Out.
Yeah, I agree. I'm looking forward to the four-way. I like MJF in that match. I like him to pin one of the other two, not Adam Page, because then when Adam Page, because I think Hangman is going to win the AEW title at All Out, I think MJF could be the first legit contender to say, well, I beat you back at Fyter Fest.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you didn't pin him. Yeah, well, it doesn't matter. You know, great heel work. Great heel work. And I love Best Friends. I'm a big Trent Beretta guy. I like Trent. But I still think, and this, I think this is another match where another example where we're going to see. And do you? I don't. Maybe you guys know this guy better more than I do, but I've just seen a couple of instances of him. I am becoming a big Scorpio Sky fan, and I think that's a guy who eventually could be a contender for the world title down the line. So I like as much as I love SoCal Uncensored, I think Best Friends is going to win that match. I noticed that maybe we'll see her on commentary, but I do think we'll have a Britt Baker sighting in this match.
Yeah.
Will we see Jericho, Steve?
I am not aware of his Fozzy commitments. I'm going to say no. I think they are going to wait until the next show to do this, to do anything with him, based on absolutely nothing but a guess.
Mm. Right. Okay. What do you think, Nate?
Yeah, I could see them holding Jericho off until Fight for the Fallen.
Okay. Well, apparently he's going to be there. So,
did you just fish us in?
Will he actually be there? Or will it be a cardboard cutout like at Starcade?
Or will he be dressed like somebody else?
Starcast.
Will it be the three schmoes that he had dress up in various Chris Jericho characters over the years, like he did it all in for his entrance?
Oh, that was a great entrance too.
Yeah,
I agree. So anyway, there's
Jericho's Greg Maddux at this point. I know we talked about how he maybe shouldn't be in the position that he's in New Japan last time, Scotty. But I think he's Greg Maddux now. Like he doesn't have the fastball anymore, but he can still get you out with some junk. He's a crafty veteran. Like the stuff that he can still do well, I think he does well. But there's stuff that he probably should take out of his repertoire at this point.
I agree.
I'm looking at you, Lion Salt.
Yes. Yeah. Take that. He's John Smoltz.
Number 29. Oh, look at that. All right. So AEW Fyter Fest taking place this Saturday night in Daytona Beach. And we'll talk about that in a couple weeks, because in a couple weeks we'll be right around the corner from the next big show, Fight for the Fallen. All right. Let's quickly, before we go to break, let's talk about this weekend for Ring of Honor. It is Best in the World. Two nights. Tonight, if you're listening to this, the day that it's that we posted it, Friday. Tonight in Baltimore at the UMBC Event Center, and then Saturday night TV taping in Philly at the 2300 Arena, which I think, if I remember correctly, I think that's the old ECW Arena. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. It's the old ECW Arena. So here's the card for night one. Jay Lethal versus Kenny King, which I'm kind of pumped for that, actually. The Allure against Kelly Klein and Jenny Rose. Nick Aldis and TBA to take on the Briscoe Brothers. It was going to be Colt Cabana, but Colt got hurt. Villain Enterprises, Marty Scurll, PCO, and Brody King take on Lifeblood and PJ Black for the six-man tag titles. Dalton Castle takes on Dragon Lee. On the pre-show, Flip Gordon will take on Roosh. Roosh. Silas Young will face Jonathan Gresham in a pure rules match. Shane Taylor will take on Bandido for the TV title. And in the main event, Matt Taven will defend the ROH world title against Jeff Cobb. Nate, anything stick out at you here?
I think if I had to choose, if I had to pick between one or the other, I think I'd probably lean towards, I think I'm leaning towards night one.
Yeah, well, here's night two. Let me. You know, my bad. Let me get night two real quick.
Oh yeah, I looked ahead at both cards, but yeah. I prefer night one in Baltimore.
Okay, well here's night two, which is a TV taping. Angelina Love, Jenny Rose, and Tasha Steeles and Stella Gray will in a four corner survival match to determine the number one contender for the Women of Honor World Title.
Ugh.
Silas Young will face Josh Woods. Dalton Castle versus Jeff Cobb versus Jonathan Gresham versus Kenny King in a four-corner survival match.
There. Okay, that's better.
Flip Gordon will take on Marty Scurll. Sumi Sakai will take on Carissa Rivera. And Sumi Sakai got hurt at the G1 Supercard that I was at the Garden. This is her first match back. And the main event, the Briscoe Brothers will take on Roosh and Dragon Lee. So definitely the Friday night in Baltimore is definitely the better card. There's no doubt about that.
Like, honestly, well, I know it's the gimmick. We got these two nights, but yeah, I could just skip maybe outside of one or two matches on night two. I could skip the entire card.
Yeah, I can too. I might want to see Sumi Sakai because she impressed me when I saw her at the Garden at the G1.
Yeah, she's been around for a while.
Yeah,
I'd assume that they'd add more to that since it is a TV taping. But yeah, that is a rough night two right there. Although that Briscoe's rush, I'm sorry, Roosh and Dragon Lee match.
Roosh. I got yelled at for saying Rush today, too. And then I started humming Limelight. Any titles change hands, Steve?
Possibly Bandito over Shane Taylor.
Yeah, maybe. I don't see Matt Taven losing.
No.
No. I mean, Jeff Cobb hasn't lost yet. He's lost the belt, but he wasn't pinned or submitted. And they're going to make Taven beat him and have the first two, you know, kind of like we were talking about Kofi to kind of legitimize his title reign, although I'm sure there'll be crazy antics. I still think that they are going to build towards a Roosh Matt Taven match down the line with the member of Los Ingobernables de Japón. See, I'm trying to hit all the high spots tonight, guys.
Steve, you didn't say it. It's supposed to be Los Ingobernables de Japón. You got to say it with some Roosh. You have to say it. I could see Shane Taylor losing. Silas Young's been pretty funny, though. There was a great on the ROH YouTube page. It was a vignette of him beating the shit out of fucking like these scrawny little turds in the dojo. And then some big jacked up dude comes in. And he goes, "Ah, you're not ready yet. You'll get your chance." And he leaves while he's got a cigarette in his mouth. It's actually pretty funny.
Problem with ROH, and it's nothing against the performers. It's just, we've already talked, Scotty, about, you know, you got WWE, you got New Japan, you got AEW. For some people, they've got Impact. So it's like, where does ROH fit in 2019 in the viewing habits of the average fan? And for me, unfortunately, you know, I'd say maybe 2 years ago, I was pretty hot with ROH. But now it's something like I'll probably watch night one. Or night two, but it won't be for another couple of weeks probably. Like it won't. It's not appointment television. It's something. Yeah, I'll get to it maybe in July, maybe in August.
Right.
Maybe after SummerSlam, I'll get around to it.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Well, there'll be two ROH shows before SummerSlam. The next show after this is Mass Hysteria, which will take place on July 21st in Lowell, Mass. Then after that is Summer Supercard, which is a combo show between CMLL, New Japan, and ROH, and the NWA. That's going to be on August 9th up in Toronto.
Okay.
So a couple of big ROH shows before SummerSlam. Anyway, great weekend of wrestling. Of course, Best in the World, which you can watch on the Fight TV app. Not the Fight TV, the Honor Card, or what is it? Honor Club app. And yeah, then,
you can probably get it on Fight Club, too. They usually have it on there.
And then, of course, Fighter Fest, you could get on the Bleacher Report app. And it's free. And that and Fight for the Fallen will be free. I can almost guarantee you All Out will be $50. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about that, just like Double or Nothing is. And that's fine. I'll pay $50 for that because I think that's going to be a good show. All right. Great first segment, boys. When we return, we would not have paid $50 for this show, but...
Speak for yourself.
Fortunately, I don't think you had to. Back then, how much were those shows, Steve?
I think $9.99. $10.08, just like you get paid for the network right now. We're going to go back to October 2002 for our next installment of our classic TNA pay-per-view recap. We go to the asylum. Brother Steve, Brother Scott, Brother Nate, after the break.
Felt like I was in the asylum the whole time watching that because...
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place Three Nations, JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceThreeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place Three Nations Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place Three Nations Pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these current shows, plus archives of our previous podcasts over the past 8 years, as well by subscribing to our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others available at PlaceMation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using www.placetimidation.com/Amazon while doing your online shopping. And be sure to join us at our forum at bigelow34.proboards.com for all sorts of wrestling, sports, and pop culture discussion each and every day where you can make your voice heard. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceTimidation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
are back on Place to Be Nation's main event. Steve Willie, Scotty, and the Godfather holding things down. Episode 129. So of course, we got to send a shout out to Paul Silas. It's always good. It's always good to shout out Paul Silas.
Wow.
It was either Paul Silas or Royce White, and you know what's Royce White doing these days?
That's true.
I hope he's still around. So, but you know what is around, Scotty? Before we get into our wonderful TNA recap this week, what is around for the people is the Kings of Sport Patreon.
Is it?
It is, Scott. And for the low, low price of $5 or the high, high price of $50, wherever your pocketbook affords you, you can subscribe, become a patron of the Kings of Sport. Brother Marcus Vandenberg from Yahoo Sports and myself. Each month we have not only video versions of the Kings of Sport podcast, you can get the classic audio version as well. We've got political show, which is coming back following the Democratic debates. You talk about ROH having, you know, two nights, and night one was definitely better than night two. The night two for the Democratic debate is where the stars are. There were a lot of no names on night one, but night two, you're pulling out the big hitters. But we've got a political show up there. We've got a new show in the works that is going to highlight wrestlers of color, both past, that's present, cool, and future.
That's awesome.
We've got Julian Shabazz, who has a doctorate in history, and he's somebody who is a fan of black wrestlers and Hispanic wrestlers over the years, and he's going to be the first guest on this show whenever we get it launched. That's going to be myself and Chris from LA, Chris Ely, who is a political science professor out in California. We're going to get into that. And who knows? You know, we've done some MCU reviews before on the channel. So basically, whatever the people want to hear and whatever the people are willing to put their hard-earned dollars behind, Marcus and I will provide to the people. So head over to patreon.com/thekingsofsport, patreon.com/thekingsofsport, and join people. Join the illustrious role of men like Scott Criscola and Steve Willie, who have donated or pledged their support, pledged their unyielding support to the Kings of Sport Patreon.
Yes.
It's well worth it.
Tremendous. It absolutely is. Plenty of great content. And, of course, we won't go through the whole thing, but, of course, check out all the great podcasts on both the PTBN Pop feed and, of course, the PTBN Wrestling feed. Myself and my PIC, Mr. Rosero, on the Place to Be podcast. Of course, this fantastic show. A bunch of other great wrestling shows as well. And, of course, the Pop feed. Coming soon, myself, Mr. Atherton, Mr. Tomato, and the Doctor will be bringing you the next installment of The Year in Pop, the year of our birthday, the centennial or bicentennial, 1976 coming up. So stay tuned for that. Of course, we'll have a lot of Pop Goes the Movies coming up, a lot of reviews of some of the best summer movies that have come out. Of course, one of the big ones just came out this past weekend, that, of course, being Toy Story 4. And of course, Aladdin's out. We got a bunch of other stuff still ready to come out as well. So check it out on the Place to Be Nation Pop feed. And of course, all the great comic stuff that our good friends, Mr. Phillips, Nikki Duke, Russell Sellers, Jenny, who can I turn to, et cetera, et cetera. So check out the great.
I'm waiting. No Hot Men in Black International review.
I thought somebody was going to do it. I think I thought that Andy and Miranda from Geek and Science, we're supposed to do a MIB International, but I'm not sure if they've gotten to it yet.
I had such high hopes for that movie, but then I started reading the reviews.
Well, the problem is that Thor and Valkyrie left Mjolnir or wherever left the harbor town there and decided to get a new job Thor should have went back to being fat and playing Fortnite. So anyway,
but to the contrary, Scotty, and I'm really excited for this. The early reviews I've heard for Spider-Man, fantastic.
Yeah, really good.
Yes, they are. How about this for a tidbit, guys, before we move on? Spider-Man Far From Home is 129 minutes. So it's, what, 2 hours and 9 minutes? Pretty good length.
That's a real length movie.
Yeah, it's good length. If you add all 23 movies now? Is that the 23rd movie? Yeah. If you add all 23 movies together, you get exactly 3,000 minutes.
Mm.
So starting now, we're going to stay on for 3,000 straight. No, I'm not.
Wait, did I hear 3,000 minutes?
Did I just say 3,000?
It all ties together.
It does, right? It does. 3,000 minutes of SmackDown now. So anyway, check out the great stuff we have on both the PTBN Pop feed and the PTBN Wrestling feed. All right, gentlemen. Are you ready, Steve? Steve's been chomping at the bit. I love an excited Steve Willie is an excited me. So that's all it comes down to. Gentlemen, October 16th, 2002, from the fairgrounds, otherwise known as The Asylum, for episode number 17 of the weekly NWA TNA pay-per-view. All right, guys, I gave you a hint off mic, off air. Of course, 2 days before, two days before on the 14th was the newest issue of Sports Illustrated. There was four members of one team on the cover. Anybody want to take a guess who that team was? Who was on the cover of SI that week? Nate.
October, I'm guessing it's baseball, World Series related, MLB playoffs perhaps. So I'm going to say 02.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say it was the Marlins. Maybe that was one of the years the Marlins got all those big players.
Okay. Steve?
I am going to go with the Giants.
Okay. Nate, you're off by a year. The Marlins was 03. The 02 World Series was the Giants and the Angels. But you're wrong. Neither team's on there.
Oh.
That week's SI was the NHL preview issue. So on the cover was the bane of Steve Willie's existence, the defending Stanley Cup champion, Detroit Red Wings. Suck it, Konstantinov.
Yeah.
Would you put them at the top of your most despised teams, or is it the Packers?
The Packers by far. The worst fans.
Cheesy trash.
Yeah. Man. I always thought the Red Wings fans, no shout out to Jordan Duncan, but the cephalopod throwing onto the ice always seemed a little bit kind of
cephalopod. Steve, they can't even spell cephalopod. They can't even spell octopus. Sorry, Jordan.
I always found that was kind of disgusting and gross, but
and what a waste of good seafood for fuck's sake. For being Italian, I could eat that shit on Christmas Eve. Come on. What a waste of good seafood. Anyway, that week's cover of SI was the Detroit Red Wings. It was the NHL preview issue. So anyway, I like that little tidbit. All right. Steve, hop in.
All right. I need to take a little breath here. Breathe in, breathe out. So graphics a little bit different this week. You know, I started to do a little video graphic review, which I have liked for people who are just popping in now and again to recap what's gone on over the last couple weeks. We immediately have Goldie in her only appearance of the night with Jorge Estrada, again saying that Yang is in All Japan, and for no apparent reason, he has a new valet named Priscilla. He says he's looking for a new partner, and in the background, you see X-Pac. I forgot that this happened. I split this over 2 days because I'm not insane. He's, you know, kind of peeking out of the bathroom, like a almost like a 70s sitcom look, like woo, and walks away. About a minute later, April comes out of the same room. Tanae knew it was the bathroom, so he must have been back there looking for some play as well. We also had Laura coming up before that. Lawler came out looking for April as well during this whole thing. So we go immediately to our first match, which is the returning David Young versus Brian Lawler. Do we have any idea how much longer he's around? Because
I don't. It can't be that long. It's got to be maybe the end of the year.
I'm going to ask this every episode. Dreadful. I'm going to ask this every dreadful. Episode. We're going to start it. So, they also said that David Young has been in Japan as well. So they have a pretty wide traveling roster at this point. And I don't know if you guys noticed too, but they have a lot of guys that you usually see were not on the show tonight. Loki and The other Brooklyn guys like the SATs and Red, Scott Hall was not there again. There, quite a lot of the regular X Division guys were not there. They had a few new people. This was terrible. Lawler was like just clowning, like purposely falling over the rope, like this most convoluted fall into April's crotch that I, you know, like fell off the apron, bounced on the floor and ended up with his head in her lap. And this is after he's browbeating her the whole time. Just all sorts of low end heat, like crotch grabs and middle fingers to the crowd. Young eventually misses a moonsault. Lawler gets his goggles on, misses the hip hop drop. For a second, I thought David Young was going to beat him. And then for some reason, April, who's got Munchausen syndrome, I guess now, waves at David Young, and Lawler hits a reverse DDT for the win. Terrible.
this is a fun experiment, folks. All right, let's everybody imagine that you have $10, which is the cost of this pay-per-view, on the table. And for every good segment, we leave a dollar. For every bad segment, we take a dollar away. Right now, Steve, I'm sitting with $9 on my table. And they're lucky I don't take more.
I meant Stockholm Syndrome, by the way. I didn't mean Munchausen. She's not faking she's sick. But all of a sudden, after... this show just beat the life out of me. You know how, like, some of the other TNA shows, there was, like, stuff that's so bad it was good, like the Johnsons and stuff like that, and the Dups, and we get to sit here and laugh ha-ha-ha at it. This didn't even have that. It was just a lot of, like, one-star matches.
Yeah.
All right. I'm worried about how much we're going to have left at the end of this. It's like that Lucky 7 game from Price is Right, Nate, that you're going to be out of dollars before we're halfway through the show.
Might have to take out a loan.
Yeah. We're not going to get the Kia. We have a recap of Siaki and Jerry Lynn. It's odd that it keeps changing from color to black and white. I think they were, like, Boresh was getting into his artsy phase. Lynn is out. Actually does a really good kind of just angry face promo. Threatens Siaki. He's going to give this darn kid a reality check. Siaki's out. He's completely greased up. We've already seen that he's going to have a grudge match with Estrada, so it's weird that he's got, like, two grudge match type things going on at once. Shouts out to Lynn. He's not going to be a mid-carder for 15 years like him. And then attacks Jerry Lynn's leg. And what is, for I believe, the first out of five times tonight. So we don't get the 10 Goldilocks appearances, but we're going to get five security run-ins.
Yes.
So all the X Division guys who are there, Barons, Armstrong, and the security jobbers are all out to split them up.
Way too much Harris.
Yeah, there's a lot of Harris in this show.
Way too much Harris.
Let's see. Okay, we did an interview with Six-Pac earlier today, kind of referenced some of his GWF matches in the past with Jerry Lynn, because he's got the X Division championship now. You wouldn't know it because he doesn't have the belt with him. I just kind of stuttering over his words, Six-Pac here, like he was not ready for this interview at all. And I don't know if you guys noticed this either, but they were sitting really, really, really close together. Like their knees were basically touching.
That's funny. Very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It's like one of Steve's therapy sessions. Now, Sean, what's really going on? Well, you know, Doc, I don't know who I am. Sometimes I'm Six, sometimes I'm the kid, sometimes I'm X-Pac. Who am I really?
Sometimes I'm Lightning.
I'm one, two, three, maybe four or five different gimmicks.
At least he didn't sound stone, though. At least he kind of knew. It seemed like he knew where he was, we think.
Yeah. And essentially what he's trying to get across is that, hey, I've been a gimmick for so long, and do I actually have what it takes to have a great wrestling singles match? And Tanay does a better job in the match to come against AJ of establishing that, hey, can he hang with the young guys? Can he keep up?
It's a good story.
Yeah.
It is a good story.
All right, so we get Siaki's second entrance into the ring, and he's going against Estrada. West immediately wonders if Estrada and Priscilla are an item. We essentially see nothing of Priscilla besides the fact that she's at ringside. She has absolutely nothing to do with this match. I have no idea why she's there. Estrada's out, pretty hot, kind of back and forth. He leapt over the top rope into a moonsault, which is pretty cool. Did a belly-to-belly over the top rope. And for some reason, it just felt like the crowd was not into a lot of this week. I thought this actually had a pretty good start and middle to the match. There's a couple of high-flying moves. Let's see. Estrada missed a top rope leap to the floor after Siaki pulled away Priscilla. So I guess she did go into the match a little bit, but there was really, like, he was going to miss anyway. So it was complete whiff on it. And then Siaki throws him back in, hits him with the Siak. Was it the Siakaplex?
Yeah, the Siakalypse.
That's
the Ciclope.
Ciclope.
And that, the Siakalypse doesn't even make sense, because I guess it's supposed to be like the apocalypse, but Siak and Apoc are like, they're different syllables.
The Siakalypse. Siakalypse, like, man,
now maybe if it was like the Siak alone, like the cyclone, that would work.
Or the Siak cologne, which is what Steve wears with his clients. Siak cologne.
This is a match. I think like the crowd was bad, but I also think they didn't care, and they didn't give him a reason to care, because honestly, this feud is this match should have probably taken place a couple weeks ago.
Yep, I was just going to say that.
When that feud is still pretty hot.
Yeah, nobody cares at this point.
Well, and they've already had Siaki move on to Jerry Lynn like 3 weeks ago, and they're just like, oh, wait, we forgot to finish that off. Because it was pretty hot. They had Siaki had that great match with Yang, and this was, could have been the blow-off for the week after that, and then, move on. I wonder who the next Flying Elvis is going to be. I honestly don't know the answer to that. I'm not sure. But we heard Estrada's looking for a partner, so.
I totally forgot that there was going to be another one.
One of my favorite parts of the night is right here when Jerry Lynn comes out and attacks Siaki, and it is almost like move for move, the exact same pull apart they had in the last segment with the same security guys, with Barons and what's his face come out, and then Harris comes out. It was like they forgot that they put the first one on the table. Was this a live one? Did they forget that they did this?
I think so.
They went out and did, like, that's the only thing I can think of, was that they forgot that they were supposed to do it after the match and not before the match.
Right. You're right, though. Literally move for move, that like the pull apart guys were in the same place.
Mm-hmm.
It was crazy. Yeah, it was crazy.
Harris threw him out again. So, okay. Budget cuts already seen by TNA in the 17th episode, because we are down to one cage dancer. We no longer have two cage dancers.
I'll let go. Yeah, you make more money doing dances down the street. At the shit-ton traffic.
Maybe the cage dancer like was Priscilla. It was like the Nitro Girls at the end of getting promoted.
Yes.
Storylines.
Yeah. She actually gets a script. She can read it.
Oh!
So, this gets worse. Derek Wilde is out. We saw him in a tag team with Ace Steele. Mm-hmm. But remember, Ace Steele turned heel and is with Mortimer Plumtree now.
Yes.
And he's a little bit wacky. He's a little bit crazy. And so this is an X Division match. And Mortimer Plumtree said he was signing up X Division guys. And this is important for a couple reasons later on in the show. While the story of the match was he was trying to do all sorts of head scissors and Hurricane Rana variations. The only problem I had with that is Kid Cash has been doing that, and Kid Cash is a lot better than Derek Wilde. Now, there's a cool corner dropkick with Wilde, who is in the Shattered Dreams position, and Ace Steele ran towards him. some reason, a top rope superplex got a holy shit chant from the crowd, which is bizarre.
Yeah.
And Steele eventually finished him off after some double underhook knees, and followed by the twist of Kane, which is like a gory grow special into a reverse stunner.
Yep. Page Man, this two, is...
Usually we talk a lot in between the matches, but I feel there's just really nothing much for you guys to say.
No, it's just been one piece of garbage after another.
How many dollars do you have left at this point, Nate? What have you thrown down?
I think I'm at about $4 now.
Oh.
So this show has taken away $6 from me. So we'll see if they can redeem themselves in the back half.
Those $6 went to Shitan Traffic's G-string. The one dancer left.
Time to empty the wallet.
And Ace Steel's a good worker, but this match is garbage.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he went from just kind of regular wrestler to crazy guy in 1 week because he signed with an old frat boy in a sweater.
Right.
So our next match, which was set up wonderfully last week, the tag team of Jeff Jarrett and Miss TNA Bruce against E.G. James and Hermie Sadler.
And there were some garbage promos earlier in the show.
Hermie Sadler,
you're not a good driver. You're a bad driver, and you're a bad wrestler, and I know that. I'm not a bad wrestler, and I'm not a bad driver, and I'm going to take care of you. You're a bad driver. Oh, my God. It was fucking... Even Jeff Jarrett couldn't do promos this bad. But it's just... I mean, this is just fucking garbage. This is garbage.
And let's not forget that teaspoonful of homophobia.
Yeah, that too.
And
I know.
Dog throws on to the heap.
I mean, they tell BG James tells Bruce, "I know what you can do." The question is, Jeff Jarrett, what can you do? And I'm like, "What the fuck is going on here?" This is terrible. Fucking hillbillies, I tell you.
Like, what is this, Jim Cornette reviewing AEW?
I know.
I'm joking, folks. I love Cornette. I love me some Cornette.
Oh my God, this match is terrible. And forget Hermie Sadler. BG James should not be in a ring yet.
No, he's not yet. He gets better, obviously.
Yes.
But at this point, he's not great in the ring, and he's not even really that great on the mic.
No. He's still dipping the joy juice. He's taking Gorilla's joy juice. Not good.
Don West has had to sell a lot of things in his life, and probably a lot of things that he's regretted.
Mm-hmm.
He had a sell, and this is his quote. "This is what we wanted to see. Hermie Sadler in the ring with Miss TNA Bruce." The greatest salesman of all time. To be able to say that with a straight face.
Oh, Don. It's like the brown bag special.
Yeah. Hermie Sadler and BG James are both just wrestling in regular clothes. Hermie Sadler's just got like some workout gear, like 2002 sleeveless Nike dry fit, regular sneakers. They eventually Sadler pins Bruce by sitting down on a sunset flip attempt. That I don't know how they botched that, but he botched sitting down. And then
it's not good.
Jarrett, for no reason, turns on Bruce, and it was just terrible.
Yeah.
Not good.
You know it's bad when, as much as we have disliked BG James so far, he might have been the best part of this match.
Yeah, even Jarrett didn't look good.
No.
That says a lot.
Yeah, I don't know if Jarrett even wanted to be there.
Nah, this is not good. And they've got to end this Bruce stuff and get back to, like, we're getting to the point now. I mean, we've been on the air since May. I think we've had enough of the gimmick, like actors and athletes and stuff. And let's just get down to wrestling.
Yeah. How much money do you think Hermie Sadler was pumping into this thing at this point?
I don't know, but I mean, he was driving the TNA car, right? Wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just.
And how much money do you think we would have had to pump in 2002 to be able to get on the show and wrestle?
I was gonna say, if Hermit Sadler can get on, like, I'm sure if we had pulled our money together, one of us could have gotten on the show.
The Place to Be Nation car, the Kings of Sport car, with a big crown on the hood. Oh yeah.
I would want to go on TNA so I could get wins over people I wasn't qualified to get wins over.
Exactly. You should pin Ron Killings and be the NWA champion.
Yeah.
Speaking of matches that should not qualify to be on the show.
This was even worse.
This
what
match
the fuck would happen on this show? I mean,
this
seriously.
Match would not have made Worldwide or Saturday Night in WCW 2000. Norman Smiley, and you know, I'm happy Norman Smiley's back right there. I enjoy a Norman Smiley match versus Ron Harris. They've gotten away from Harris and his wacky tag team partners. Now we're getting that mid-card Harris run we've always wanted. I was watching the crowd in this a bit. There's that woman in the front row who was trying to look at Boresh and get the chants going. They said, I was trying to think of when the last time we saw Norman Smiley besides the pull apart brawls earlier in the show, and it was when Truth hung him, right? Truth hung him and then his wife came out.
Yeah.
These matches seemed a lot shorter tonight too, which I'm okay with. Smiley got the big wiggle slam, which was actually pretty impressive on Big Ron. I don't even remember who won this match, and I took notes. I think Smiley. Did Smiley win? No, Harris won, and then
he
kept attacking after the bell. Smiley just snaps.
Yep.
Don Harris is out for the fourth time.
Yep. He's definitely overworked.
Yeah. And then the Harrises go nose to nose again, which they did 2 weeks ago. But last week, Don Harris came out to help Ron Harris.
Right. Yep.
So now they're back to that.
Yeah.
Yep. We only got 3 matches to go, though.
Why are the Harrises on so much?
We know why.
Why can they both be
scared? Norman Smiley.
Poor Norman.
We know why on that one, too.
Yeah, we know why, Steve.
Because it's Lethal Smiley. Hey, bro. It's Lethal Smiley, bro.
So, I texted you guys because I split this up over, I think, Sunday and Tuesday, maybe Monday and Tuesday. And this is where I stopped for the evening, the first night. And I think I said something to something like, pray for me, guys. Good luck on watching this show.
Yeah.
But I was like, okay, I knew there were 3 title matches to go, and we usually get 2 really good matches on all of these shows. So I'm like, okay, one or 2 of these are going to deliver. I was wrong. Harris and Stormouts, they're called America's Most Wanted somewhere because there's someone in the crowd that has an
American. Somebody's got a sign.
Sound, yeah.
But they're still not officially America's Most Wanted.
Right, it's right there for you. It's a great name.
Love it.
And so they are against,
it's a mystery, Steve, as to how this sign got in the audience. Maybe he was supposed to save it for the next taping.
Yes.
Yes. He found it under a chair.
So that not AMW is going against not the Michael brothers, Rick and Chris and Sean and, you know, Brett and Al. I'm trying to think of all the other Michaels who, you know.
And Al! Do you believe in miracles? Yes, will this show end? Oh, God. And I love, and Storm and Harris are great.
Yeah.
And this match was 6:45. I don't think this match was terrible.
No.
There was still some chemistry issues, but I don't know. Can we just say right now that they have stabilized the tag division, but they still haven't had that signature win yet.
Yeah.
You know? Right, Nate?
Well, they haven't, and I don't think we'll get that signature until they get a name. Because right now, they're still just Harrison Storm.
Yeah.
But I think once they make that transition into officially becoming AMW, we'll see. Because even the crowd, like the crowd was kind of into it, but not really. So I think once we get this, the team situated, then the division will kind of coalesce around them.
Right. That's a good point. But
that being said, like, this was still the second best match on the show.
Yes. I concur.
Easily.
Yeah. What do you think, Steve?
Yeah, I completely agree with that. They did. There was a shift in the tone, I thought, of the announcing, where instead of Storm and Harris being treated kind of like flukes, where they keep, you know, getting lucky wins after they beat the SATs, they're like, okay, hey, you know, these are the only undefeated competitors on the roster who've had more than three matches.
Right.
And so they're starting to say, hey, these guys are for real. They...
Like, hey, this is the only legitimate team on the roster besides the Harris brothers.
Right. Well, and even saying over the singles competitors, like, no one else has lost a match. Just, you know, they are the only... No one else has lost a match. Good God, this is wearing me out. That they are the only team who hasn't lost. They are the only people who haven't lost. No, the singles guys have even lost matches. So anyways, Harris wins with the catatonic while Storm is holding everyone else up. And then we have another pull apart. I'm excited. The Hot Shots come out, making their return. Refs are out, but not security this time. For some reason, Jeremy Borash gets in the ring, and then he leaves. Now here come the security jobbers again. Was that the fifth time? Man, maybe they're on six times. So yeah, they are out for another time, and now we have the Michaels brothers. No, not the Michaels brothers, not America's Most Wanted, and the Hot Shots fighting. So we might be seeing a three-way next week, would be my guess.
That would be fine. That would be fine. It'd be a way to kind of start galvanizing the division again, start coming up with some fresh teams. I'm good with that.
Yeah, and like you said, guys, this was an okay average, like two and a half star match.
Yeah.
And best match of the show to this point.
Yes. Till this one.
Right. And so we have the X Division title, Six-Pac, who has the belt after having that kind of, speaking of flukes, that fluky win coming out at the end to steal the belt in the ladder match. He's a face, though, by the way. Against AJ Styles, who also has Mortimer Plumtree. I understand that they're trying to get Mortimer in the X Division as a manager.
This is not good, though, for AJ.
Why does AJ...
This makes no fucking sense whatsoever.
I mean, then again, you know, when you think all-time great managers, Bobby Heenan, Jim Cornette, Sherry Martel, Mortimer Plumtree. You know, it just makes sense to have the best with the best.
Correct.
And like AJ, one of the top guys on the show, had matches every single show, you know, 16 action, you know, live action shows, because the other one was that recap. One of the most over guys, even as a heel, getting face reactions. And then, and maybe that's why. Maybe that's why they put Mortimer in there to get booed, but there was no reason outside, you know, hey, we want to get Mortimer over as this rich guy buying people out. They stated right. That this was Six-Pac's first high-profile singles match in a long time, as he's generally been in, like, tags and six-mans. And
yep.
So this was a little bit of a slow start. It was more of like a kind of a basic on the mat match, just doing some basic, you know, like arm drags and stuff. So much slower compared to the X Division matches we usually see with all the high flying stuff. AJ hits a Rana and then gloats, which angers Six-Pac, who then does some sort of weird X Division, you know, I said an X Division style Bronco Buster, because, you know, you guys doing corkscrews off the top to the floor, but here comes Six-Pac with his Bronco Buster. For a while, crowd was mildly in favor of AJ. So we're already starting to see the crowd embrace more of the here's my air quotes, kind of the homegrown talent, because,
yep,
you know, AJ, Harris, Storm, I mean, I consider them more, you know, they are TNA guys at this point.
Definitely.
AJ with the Tope Con Hilo misses a spiral tap. There's a pretty cool sequence where Six-Pac kind of hulks up, hits three pretty stiff spin kicks that AJ just completely sells them like they're murder. Gets cut off, though. AJ takes a really weird bump to the floor, so Six-Pac can do kind of like this weird cannonball-like move from the top to the floor. Then there's a discus clothesline from AJ, which he has done in previous matches, hits the ref, so X-Pac gets an X-Factor, Six-Pac gets an X-Factor, I'm going to do that forever. And Plumtree comes in with the world's weakest pin breakup. Six-Pac gets pissed off, does the Bronco Buster, and starts raining punches and kicks, and he pushes the ref, gets disqualified, and we need to remember this for the next match, because the push of the ref caused a disqualification in a title match.
Correct.
Six-Pac gets angry, nails the ref again after the match, and here comes the security out for another time.
Oh my God, they're getting overworked. No coffee, no union coffee break.
Goldilocks getting jealous.
I know, right?
Yeah.
She hasn't been on in an hour and a half.
All right, let's just go. I mean, this was another good match, best match on the show, but...
Yeah. No, it was a great match. It was a highlight of the show. It highlighted the division that they're supposed to be highlighting. I don't think anybody's upset that X-Pac is champion because at least he's putting on good matches, but you're right. They kind of, the crowd here at least kind of dispelled with the storyline and went with the fact that AJ's the homegrown and not X-Pac, Six-Pac. So that was an interesting kind of swerve there, but it'll change.
Yeah. This is a little bit not up to par of the other X Division matches.
No, so not at all. Not at all.
Let's finish this off here. We were talking in between segments, and I went to Scott Keith's page because I saw that he had reviewed this show. He gave the following match a -1.5 stars. I wouldn't go that bad because we had that Hermie match, but we got Ron the Truth Killings versus Kurt Hennig. They're building this as Truth's biggest test to date. His previous wins as a title holder were over Monty Brown, Jerry Lynn, and Loki. Truth cut a promo ahead of time, called out the NWA officials, said that he had wanted to give other minority wrestlers a chance to get his belt, and besides Brown and Loki, they have not done that. Hennig comes out to an awful country mishmash of
Terrible.
A little Queen in there. There was and then that they have like the one singer does every single song. There are only 10 minutes left at the start of this match. So I wrote this down. I'll take a picture if you want to see it. I said 10 minutes left. When will Jeff Jarrett come out during this match?
Right.
I forgot also about Mr. Wrestling 3 from the previous couple weeks. Mm. That was the KKK guy turned into Mr. Wrestling 3.
Yes.
So Perfect laid into him. There's a backdrop onto the table from Hennig, and then Hennig started smashing Truth with chairs. Now remember, this is a title match, not a no disqualification match.
Mm-hmm.
And Six-Pac's got DQ'd for pushing the referee. So we have chairs involved.
And remember, Kurt Hennig said to Mike Tenay he wanted to bring wrestling back.
Oh, yes. I forgot about that. Yeah, he sat down with Tenay for a little bit. Truth, they kept trying to say that I saw him reach in his pocket once, but that he had some sort of substance in his pocket, raking the eyes. And I don't know, maybe he was trying to try out for the Giants for the World Series against the Angels that you referred to.
Yes.
Okay, so then it gets wacky because Mortimer Plumtree's group comes out in the aisleway. He's got AJ, he's got Ace Steel, which is, you know, he's got his X Division guys. That's the whole point of that they're trying to drive home the last 3 weeks, is that he's looking for X Division guys. He also has Ron Harris with him because why? Why?
Because Ron Harris wants to be in the X Division.
Why are we
so focused
on
that? He wants to be in the K division. He wants to be in the K3 division.
So the ref gets
knocked
out. I mean,
that symbol, if you straighten it out, does kind of look like an X.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, I'm not the one that got the tattoo, Steve.
Yes.
Oh, that is right.
Oh, man. I wonder why Sonny Siaki has those initials. So... Speaking of white supremacists, Mr. Wrestling 3 is out in his all white gear with the absolute slowest run in an attack in the history of professional wrestling.
Yeah, it's only like he was drunk.
Might have been.
Six and BG James comes out. That's right, because they were with Hennig the other time. Security comes out again. So for the sixth time, the crowd dies. So there's all of this going on. Remember, Six-Pac got disqualified for pushing the ref. All of this has happened. There has been no disqualification.
Yeah, no bell.
No bell. So Barons or Armstrong, one of the two. I'm getting confused now. They restarted the match. So Truth is like, what the hell? He just chucks the ref. He punched Borash. He punched Barons. But the match still must continue. And if Armstrong says he doesn't get in the ring right now, he's going to get counted out and he'll lose the belt. And so here, you know, I think Truth is the face here. I'm sorry. Because he's getting screwed over and everything he says is true. He's like, they're constantly screwing him over. So Truth's about to get in the ring. And sure enough, here comes Jeff Jarrett. Low blows Hennig. Truth throws him up. Truth wins. This is one of the most overbooked things that they've done.
Yeah,
this entire show. Not.
Like, I thought they had moved past this. I really thought they had moved past this.
Yeah, and that is the end of the match, and they end the show with a promo for what I believe was just the return of the new church.
In 2 weeks.
Yeah, in 2 weeks.
And it also ends with killings. He punches everybody. He punches the ref. Punches Borash. Punches Armstrong. He punches everybody.
Mega face.
And then starts rapping.
Mm-hmm. He wants everybody to get crunked.
This is terrible. This was bad. Like, not only do I now have a deficit at my table, Steve Willie. Mm-hmm. I'm about $10 in the hole. but we talked earlier in the A block, Scott, about, you know, building credibility for your champions and talking about Kofi going from Ziggler to Samoa Joe.
Right.
The Truth title run started out promising, but they've done nothing to make this guy feel like a credible champion because of all the nonsense that has gone on during his matches up to this point.
Right. Yeah. And your $10 got broken up amongst all of the security run-ins, so each guy got paid like 16 cents. This is a fucking mess. 3 out of 10. For me, I mean, if we're grading, but this was just so sloppily pulled. And now you're finally seeing there's just way too many old guys in this bunch. The Perfects, the Lawlers. I understand they need star power to get this off the ground, but we're talking 6 months now, guys. I mean, we're 6 months into this thing now. People like AJ. They like Siaki. They like these new coming guys, the homegrown talent. We don't need to load it up with a bunch of stiffs. And it doesn't get any better the next week.
Hey, spoilers.
Oh, we won't tell you who, though. No, that's utter garbage. That was just, that's one you could skip. That's one you can skip. Believe me. That was just one of the worst shows. They need to start thinning out the roster now and start relying on some of the young talent. The tag division looks solid enough. You got a lot of young teams at this time. You know, your tag team champions are young guys, Storm and Harris, you know? Vince would not allow all these Harrises in one federation. Too many Harrises, like too many Steves. There's too many Harrises, which means Chris Harris, whose name is actually Harris, would have to change his name. Because Don and Ron are like, no, we don't change our names. Besides, Ron needs to win the X Division title because he's X through and through, baby. All right, we will be back. In 2 weeks with our next episode. Steve, you have the shoe.
Indeed.
For the next episode of the New Japan Classic Match Pick. So in 2 weeks, we hope to get some good matches from you, sir.
Sounds good.
When we're back in 2 weeks, we'll be in the middle of the G1 Climax. We'll get an update on what's going on there. Will it be July 7th already? Because July 7th is Slammiversary. The current TNA show. Although Brian Cage seems to move about as well as Kurt Hennig anyway. Anyway, he's taking on my man,
Big Mike.
Big Mike. So I'm looking forward to that. Bunch of other stuff, too. So we'll have a good time for episode 230. And I know a bunch of 30s. Thank God we're getting into a stretch of numbers where I actually know guys.
230?
So, I mean, 130. My God. That's a 230 an hour. 230 an hour is what the security got paid for this show. All right. First, Steve. For Brother Nate, I'm Brother Scott. You've been to the main event. We got to get out of here. Have a good 2 weeks. Happy 4th of July.
Hey, Steve Willie.
Hey, Nate Milton.
I know you're not a medical doctor, but I need you to check something out. Like, after watching that NWA TNA show, I've got a pain in my lower body, in my, like, almost near my nether regions. I think it's a hernia.